The red, white, and blue. We Americans treasure our flag for what it represents, but some think the flag's as important as the cross. When it comes to being citizens of both heaven and earth, believers running the race of life need to keep first things first. Stand by for some flying sparks as Erwin Lutzer takes aim at those who equate old glory with the one place of true glory. Stay with us. From Chicago's Moody Church, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. With the second message in his series, Why the Cross Can Do What Politics Can't, here is Dr. Lutzer with The Cross and the Flag.
Today it's the cross and the flag. The cross and the flag. Let me begin by asking you a series of questions, if I might. Is the American dream the same as the Christian dream? And if not, how are they different? Let me put it differently. If America were to continue to be strong and prosperous and great, does that mean that the church would be strong and prosperous and great? Or to ask it differently, is support for tax breaks for families, term limits for congressmen, and support for the National Rifle Association, are those things Christian agendas? Some of us were in Israel recently, and we visited the Golan Heights. In fact, you can't get to Caesarea Philippi without driving through the Golan Heights. If I remember correctly, our tour guide said that there, when the Golan Heights belonged to Syria, there were 6 million mines that the Syrians put on those hills. And Israel has only found 4 million of them. So if you ever go to Israel, I suggest that you not go backpacking on the Golan Heights. Choose somewhere else. But today we're going to take a walk on the Golan Heights and hopefully avoid all the mines. We're going to talk about church and state, God and government, cross and flag. And what I want you to do for this hike is to stay with me the whole way until we get to the top of the mountain, until we finish, because it may well be that as we're walking through, you may think that I'm stepping on a mine. But when you get to the end of the message, you might decide that it was only a firecracker. I want you to stay with me so that if anybody leaves this message, I might just stop and ask you where in the world you think you're going. There was a pastor who did that, said to a man who was leaving, "Why are you leaving?" The man shouted, "I'm going to get a haircut." Pastor said, "Why didn't you get a haircut before you came in here?" He said, "Before I came in here, I didn't need one." So I want you to stay to the end, even if you really need a haircut when this service is over. And some of you do, by the way, as I look at you. One day the people came to Jesus to entrap him. It's in the 22nd chapter of Matthew. Pick it up at verse 15. They come to Jesus and they deliberately try to set a trap for him, and they ask him this question. They said, "Do you think it is lawful to give tax unto Caesar, to pay this poll tax or not?" What a trick question. It was a trick question because if Jesus were to say, "Yes, I think it is lawful," he would have incurred the wrath of the Jews who hated the idea of paying taxes. They didn't think it was lawful at all. They just did it because they had to. But if Jesus would have said, "No, I don't think it's lawful. We shouldn't pay taxes to Caesar," they'd have turned him into the Roman authorities, and he'd have been tried for speaking against the government, which in those days would have been a very, very serious offense. So that's what they said to him. How was Jesus going to answer? Either way, he was trapped. Or was he? He said to them, "Give me a coin." So they fished around and they gave him a coin, and it was a denarius that was used to pay the poll tax. And he said, "Whose inscription is on this coin?" And they said, "Caesar's." Now you must understand how they hated that inscription. because they thought it was idolatry, for one thing, for a man to have his inscription put there on a coin, and for another, always bear in mind that Caesar, in the minds of those pagans, was considered to be God. So this was idolatry. They hated the tax, they hated the Romans, and they hated this currency. And Jesus looked at it and saw Caesar's imprint and said, "Well, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's." What an answer. To my knowledge in history, and some of you historians can disprove this, but I don't think anyone ever said anything that comes close to that before. What Jesus was really saying is that it is possible to pay your dues to a pagan government. Because remember, he said you should pay this poll tax, and how would the tax be used? Only to strengthen the hands of those Roman soldiers against the Jews, only to continue their slavery. But Jesus said you can go ahead and you can use and pay that poll tax, and you can do your obligation to this pagan government, while at the same time you can still pay your dues to God. You can do both, because these are separate kingdoms. Well, you know, the whole history of the Christian church revolves around the conflict between church and state. The early Christians argued in the Roman Empire that they could be good Roman citizens and still at the same time be Christians. They assumed that principle, but Rome disagreed, and Rome said, if you want to be a good citizen of Rome, you must worship like the Romans and you must declare Caesar to be God. And if not, the lions were waiting. After the Christians came to power, and you've heard me tell this story many times, and you'll probably hear it again sometime, but after the Christians came to power, they said, now you have to worship with us if you want to be a good citizen of the Holy Roman Empire, which Voltaire says was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire. But if you want to be a citizen of the Holy Roman Empire, you must believe like us too. And as the church grew in corruption, the true church was persecuted under the hand of, quote, Christians. But today we're talking about America, so we fast forward the VCR, and we pick it up as the pilgrims come to America. The pilgrims come for freedom of worship. Now, not freedom for everyone, mind you. The pilgrims never had that idea in mind. As a matter of fact, they were upset with people like William Rogers, who was a Baptist, because they saw the controversy in Europe regarding adult baptism. But they wanted freedom of religion for themselves, the way in which they saw the world, as Protestants, as Calvinists, that had been influenced by the writings of the great reformer who lived in Geneva. But by the time the Constitutional Convention comes, you have that great document and you have that famous phrase, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, which all Americans know by memory. A few comments about it. First of all, obviously, the framers of that document did not intend that this would limit religion. They thought that it would limit the government so that there would be no state church to which everyone would have to attend. The idea that social libertarians have today in interpreting this in such a way that a child cannot draw a nativity picture in a classroom is, of course, absurd and never intended by the framers of the Constitution. Or the idea that you can have a rock concert in a public park but Christians cannot sing hymns, that would cause the framers of this document to turn in their graves if they knew that it would be so interpreted. But let me ask you another question. Where did this idea of this kind of freedom come from? Europe had not experienced it, at least not at that time. Where did it come from? Well, there are, of course, two streams of thought. There are those who say that it came through the Enlightenment. That, of course, had a great bearing on it. But also the origin of the Enlightenment. Where did this idea come from? I think that it can be shown historically that really it has its roots in the Protestant Reformation. And let me tell you why. When Luther there at the Diet of Worms says that my conscience is taken captive by the word of God, I cannot and I will not recant. What he was saying is that you cannot coerce someone to be a believer. We must give people freedom of conscience to believe. You see, up until that time, it was believed that people could make the decision to make you a Christian. Others could make that decision. All that you needed to do was to be baptized on the eighth day, and you were proclaimed to be a Christian. That was it. And later on, you could belong to a church, and as long as you participated in the requirements that were laid out, there did not have to be any change of heart, really any transformation of life, any yielding to God. You simply had to go through the outward requirements. The Protestants now were saying something different. They were saying that conversion is inward, it is individual, it is personal, and it must be based on a voluntary choice. So you have the Reformation. You then have the Enlightenment, which wins some directions that we would not approve of, but all of that now influenced the American Constitution. Let me ask another question. Is it possible in America to be an atheist and be a good citizen? I think the Founding Fathers would say yes. You can be an atheist, you can believe anything you like, or nothing at all, whatever. But they also kept saying over and over again that if you want to have freedom, you must have religion believed in a widespread way, because it supports transcendent values and behavior. Because you can't just give people freedom. They're going to misuse it unless there are some inward constraints. Is America a Christian country? No, America never was a Christian country, never will be a Christian country. There are only countries that are influenced by Christianity, and certainly America was, in varying degrees. But if you study its history, and you know that even evangelicals discuss this and disagree on it, it was never specifically Christian. Religious, yes, not necessarily specifically Christian. Though, of course, Christians were involved in government.
And this is Pastor Luther, and of course what I have said is debatable. There are those who would want to say that indeed we are a Christian country. Well, I think it is much better to say that we have very strong Judeo-Christian influences. And certainly America was birthed and founded on a belief in God. We believe that all these truths are self-evident, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Well, I don't need to spend this moment with you telling you about how America is falling apart. Certainly, we are experiencing a moral and a spiritual free fall. We look around us and we see what is happening on television. We read the news and we are frequently disappointed. We are struggling with financial needs as a country, and also the whole question of leadership, which is so very, very important. But at the end of the day, please keep in mind that we do belong to that other city that I've told you about, namely the city of God. And therefore, while we are involved with the city of man in as many different ways as we can, we do not place ultimate hope in the city of man, in politics, in Washington, or anywhere else. Our ultimate hope is always in God. Bottom line, let's make a difference. Let's make a difference one person at a time as we get involved in their lives and share with them the one message that they need to hear to have eternal life.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Today, Dr. Erwin Lutzer brought part one of The Cross and the Flag, the second of eight messages in his series, Why the Cross Can Do What Politics Can't. On Thursday, more about the danger of mixing patriotism with the gospel. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. When it comes to faith and politics, we need clear teaching. This eight-part CD series can be yours as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us for tomorrow's Running to Win.